A nearly voiceless Andrew Breitbart never intended to become the story that June afternoon in 2011. He'd simply shown up at a Sheraton hotel to watch Congressman Anthony Weiner's press conference, hoping to charge his dying BlackBerry in a back corner. Within minutes, reporters swarmed him with questions about his reporting on Weiner's inappropriate online behavior. They pushed him toward the podium. For 13 minutes, with his throat ravaged by a cough, he fielded hostile questions on live television before Weiner finally appeared. This wasn't happenstance. It was the culmination of a decade-long crusade against what Breitbart called the Democrat media complex, the symbiotic relationship between progressive politics and mainstream news that he believed controlled America's narrative. His journey from apolitical California slacker to conservative media warrior offers a masterclass in how one person with righteous conviction can challenge institutional power. Breitbart's transformation began in his parents' Brentwood home, where his father's restaurant treated celebrities like regulars. Teenage Andrew delivered pizzas to Hollywood stars while envying wealthier friends. Coworker Mike introduced him to left-wing philosophy, a Cliff's Notes version of leftist thinking that prepared him for Tulane University professors. College meant partying and academic mediocrity. When overwhelmed, his department head suggested he take a semester off and go drop acid in New York. He did, burning through his inheritance before graduating with barely a 2.0 GPA. Reality struck waiting tables in Venice, serving former peers. Buying my first pair of shoes with my own money was an Emersonian epiphany, he recalled. Despite newfound work ethic, Breitbart remained liberal until the Clarence Thomas hearings. The disconnect between media portrayal and evidence shocked him. He threw a shoe at his television, unable to fathom white senators arrogantly excoriating a black man whose journey from sharecropper's grandson to Supreme Court nominee embodied the American dream. Working as a Hollywood scriptrunner earning $230 weekly, he found solace in talk radio. Rush Limbaugh revealed the architecture of media bias, like a professor I'd always wanted. By 25, having walked away from Hollywood, he prayed while driving, "Please God, give me something to do that I'm passionate about." In 1994, Breitbart discovered the internet and felt reborn. The early web was a libertarian haven where his ADHD mind could feast on information at unprecedented speed. He found Matt Drudge's report, a mix of politics, Hollywood gossip, and weather. When Drudge broke the Kathleen Willey story and scooped mainstream media on Princess Diana's death in 1997, Breitbart witnessed how one outsider could rattle the entire media establishment. Through Drudge, Arianna Huffington hired him as her researcher. His first major project exposed Clinton donor M. Larry Lawrence, who had falsified Merchant Marine Service to secure burial at Arlington National Cemetery. Lawrence was disinterred from Arlington. In January 1998, Drudge's midnight email broke the Monica Lewinsky story that Newsweek had killed. When Bill Kristol mentioned it on ABC's This Week, George Stephanopoulos immediately claimed Drudge had been discredited, a talking point from Clinton's chief of staff that morning. The Clinton administration crafted what Breitbart called a brilliant propaganda strategy. After polling showed Americans disliked exploring the president's sex life, they reframed the narrative from Clinton's lying to Republican sexual inquisition. Salon.com attacked Rep. Henry Hyde. Larry Flint offered $1 million for damaging information about congressional Republicans. Republicans ran for cover. The message was clear. The complex still controlled the big guns. After witnessing the Democrat media complex during the Clinton years, Breitbart traced its origins. Despite the Soviet Union's fall, the same cultural forces, dot police and ideological conformity, pervaded media, Hollywood, education, and government. This wasn't spontaneous 1960s counterculture. It had deeper intellectual roots. The founders understood people require moral education and that government power must be limited. Rousseau and Marx opposed this, believing people were naturally good but corrupted by society. Marx rejected fixed human nature, believing it could be changed by destroying society. After World War I exposed Marx's failed predictions, European intellectuals reimagined Marxism as cultural transformation. Frankfurt School thinkers spread influence through art, attacking cultural norms so thoroughly that many adults never experienced art celebrating beauty or transcendence. Herbert Marcuse founded the New Left, promoting sexual liberation while reframing traditional values as repressive. He developed critical theory, targeting racial, ethnic, and sexual groups as the new revolutionary force. While Marxism infiltrated universities, government, and media, most Americans couldn't decipher complex academic rhetoric. Saul Alinsky bridged this gap by posing as an insider, adopting constitutional language and referencing founding fathers. His dedication page cited Rabbi Hillel, Thomas Paine, and Lucifer, the first radical. His genius was making Marcuse's ideas accessible by disguising them as American values. In June 2009, Breitbart met James O'Keefe, who had filmed himself posing as a pimp with Hannah Giles, seeking Acorn's help to establish a brothel with underage girls. Acorn employees willingly assisted. When O'Keefe said, "We're going to take down Acorn," Breitbart replied, "No, we're going to take down the media." Breitbart devised a strategic rollout for BigGovernment.com, release videos serially, letting Acorn claim few bad apples before revealing the problem was nationwide. The first video dropped September 10, 2009. Acorn dismissed it as isolated. The next day's Washington, D.C. video proved otherwise. After both offices fired employees, the Census Bureau severed ties. Breitbart then secured a New York Post exclusive featuring New York and California videos, systematically disproving every Acorn defense. Congress voted to defund Acorn, 345-75 in the House, 85-11 in the Senate. By February 2010, Acorn dissolved as a national structure. Breitbart proved citizen journalists could topple powerful organizations protected by the establishment. At his first Tea Party rally in Santa Ana on April 15, 2009, Breitbart found hundreds of the nicest, most pro-America people imaginable, blacks, whites, Hispanics, even a patriotically dressed labradoodle. He warned they'd soon be labeled racists and violent criminals. His prediction proved accurate. CNN's Anderson Cooper, MSNBC's Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow used crude slurs against Tea Partiers, while Nancy Pelosi claimed protesters carried swastikas. Breitbart became their media protector, warning, "You need to focus on the key to the whole ballgame, the media." When Congressional Black Caucus members claimed racial slurs were used at a March 20 rally, he offered $100,000 for evidence. Four videos showed Representatives Carson and Lewis walking unobstructed with no slurs heard. The media ignored this proof. From these battles, Breitbart developed essential rules. Venture into enemy territory rather than retreating to conservative outlets. Expose the left using their own words through citizen journalism. Embrace mistakes to become invulnerable. Control your story through serialization. Use ridicule as your most potent weapon. Tina Fey damaged Sarah Palin more than any news anchor. To win the political war, you must first win the cultural war. Breitbart's vindication arrived with the Weinergate scandal in May 2011. When Congressman Anthony Weiner's inappropriate photo surfaced, despite hacking claims and media dismissals, evidence mounted. At Weiner's emergency press conference, reporters suddenly surrounded Breitbart. With his voice nearly gone, he answered hostile questions for 13 minutes on live television. When Weiner appeared, he confirmed Breitbart's accuracy. 3 weeks later, Weiner resigned. Breitbart acknowledged the personal costs. His wife had married an almost inappropriately always lighthearted guy, but now woke up next to a firebrand who is one of the most polarizing figures in the country. Yet he had discovered an America silenced by media that was now awakening. His legacy extends beyond specific stories. He created a template for conservative media activism that continues shaping American politics. Breitbart proved that one person, armed with truth, technology, and conviction, can challenge the entire system. Cultural battles aren't won by those with the biggest budgets. They're won by those willing to walk into hostile territory, expose hypocrisy in real time, and never back down. The microphone is there. Will you take the podium?